This is RSVNB Update, episode 562, recorded Saturday, April 16th, 2016. We should get matching stitches. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update once again. Just Dave and myself here this week.
That's right. What's going on, guys?
So, Mauritania Madness, the update designed to get us all interested and head back to Mauritania if we haven't been there in quite some time, as the quest, River of Blood, is coming out on April 25th. So, I use Mauritania quite a bit, mainly for the farming purposes. How about you?
Yep, same here. Herb patches and the mushroom patches are my biggest ones. I used to use Slayer Tower quite a bit when I was going to do a Slayer, and I'll be going back to do Slayer, so I'll get some more use out of it too, and I'm interested to see what it's going to be like in NXT with the rework, so
yes,
I'm excited for that.
Yes, and I mean, as much as we would have liked to have the NXT client for this week so we could see the updated Paterdomus and all the nice visual effects that come with it, well, NXT is, of course, coming in on Monday, so we'll have to go back there and have another look at that. But
right.
Anyways, we got an interesting selection of updates coming this week that are designed to introduce players back into Mauritania and remind us of what happened during the previous Myrex storylines. So first off, if you take the Lodestone to Caniphus, you'll see that there's a new area just north of the Lodestone. And in that circle, there will be a series of memorial plinths, and each of these appear every day after the update. So if you've been keeping up, you've had the chance to do four of them so far, I believe. And these represent 10 fallen Myrex statues, or heroes, rather, and you build statues of them. You adorn them with a blister wood sickle and a specific item that is reminiscent of that person. And when you do, you get a whole boatload of experience if you bless them. And yes, you can get combat experience, and Jagex does warn us about that. So it's nice they are doing that, because I know we had a bit of a discussion about that last week, whether they should be just giving it in lamps or warning us. So that's good. So basically, the experiences you get are based on the experience that you would have received during that quest. And if you complete this by the end of April, you will get 10 times the amount of experience for doing all of this. So, I mean, it's a nice chunk of XP of about 100,000. So if you're looking for XP in the skills, agility, attack, constitution, construction, crafting, defense, farming, fletching, hunter, magic, mining, slayer, strength, thieving, and woodcutting, obviously not 100K in each of those, but that'll total up to about 100K total for across all those skills, so you might as well give it a go.
Yep. Is it retroactive? Meaning, like, if I just started doing it today, can I still get it forward? Does it reset every day and you just lose out on the previous? Does it not roll over?
If you start today, you'll be able to complete it by the end of the month. There's 10 statues. So okay. As long as you start it by the 20th of April, you should be good.
Okay. All right. That makes sense then.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And you only do it once for each statue, and then you move on. So
okay.
That's the way that works. And, I mean, this is just a nice way to remember all the various characters that have passed during this quest line. And, I mean, obviously, you're not going to be able to interact with the statues, but the names will probably jog your memory. So this is just a little quick thing you can do every day. Requires 2 5-kilogram granite blocks and the sickle and whatever item has been specified by Veliaf Hertz. Yes, that is his name. So not much else to say on this aside from do this if you're very interested in the amount of XP that you get. Apparently, this will be a completionist requirement once the quest comes out. And a master quest requirement.
Yes.
Is it completionist too, or just master quest?
I think it's just master quest. The completionist is the plushies, which we'll get to in a second.
Alrighty then. Well, speaking of that, let's talk about the lost toys. This is a plushie hunt. 13 plushies located all throughout Mauritania, and boy, oh boy, is this one wild goose chase to look. I mean, you go everywhere from the little mine in Mire Ditch all the way to the very north wall of Draken's Castle to just somewhere, you know, out and about in the haunted woods and at the top level of the Paterdomus. So you will go everywhere that you possibly can go in Mauritania, even the Araxar cave. You don't need to go fight Araxar, but you just need to enter the cave and grab one of them there. And then after you do that, you'll get 13 plushies, and they all sound rather creepy, don't they?
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Yeah. And I would highly recommend that you have area sounds turned on when you're doing this, because you will hear the plushie as you get close to it.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's a nice little thing to do.
I like that.
Just hear that. Blood Altar is another one. Blood Velds on the path of the Blood Altar. It basically just everywhere that you went for a quest, you do go for a plushie. I got a sound here of what some of them sound like. I'll just play some of them right now and just to show you how creepy they actually are.
My teddy lost its head. You smell different when you're awake.
You smell different when you're awake.
It's time for baby buys. I hope you wake up.
I hope you wake up.
It's time for baby buys. I hope you wake up.
Now I'm kind of glad that I didn't have sound on. That's pretty creepy, but I like it though.
I got the best one coming next.
My teddy lost its head. We should get matching stitches.
We should get matching stitches.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's my favorite one. We should get matching stitches.
Quite appropriate for the context.
Yeah. So, basically what happens is after you complete all 13, you return to Lex and you find out he's not actually a child. He's actually a vampire.
Oh, so surprised.
Yeah. But also, you get an override, a cosmetic override that you can use, a wand in the offhand. So, lots of people were saying maybe these should have actually been followers. What do you think?
I think that would have been cool. That probably would have made it a little bit more rewarding. Overall, I think it's a cute little introduction and sort of revisit to the entire area before the quest. As we can all see, they've kind of strapped for content this month, because they pretty much have NXT and they have the Myra Q. So they're trying to stretch it over, you know, the entire month, which is fine. But I enjoyed it. I found it kind of odd that, like I said, finding all 13 plushies is actually a completion escape requirement for being sort of like an introduction to a thing of content. It almost seems like an event to become a part of like permanent content. Is,
right.
A little different, but it's not bad. I mean, it seriously takes you 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not that long. But I think it's cute. I think it's a fun little update. So
20 minutes if you use a guide.
Exactly, which we all know that I do. So
there you go. So, yeah, I mean, and you can squeeze the plushie after the one that you got if you want to hear these sounds, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll definitely be doing that, let me tell you. I found it kind of funny because literally I don't know if it was the day or 2 days before this update, I actually got completionist. So 2 days after I lost it to a bunch of stuffed toys, you know?
Wow.
So that was pretty fun. But yeah, like I said, it only takes about a half an hour, so it's pretty fun.
Yep. And of course, you get also keys. I'm not sure if the keys are going to have a use going forward.
I think they're just the Columbarium keys, like when you're burning Firewatch.
Oh, okay.
I think you can just use them. I haven't used mine.
Okay, that's why the examine info looked familiar then. I thought maybe we might need these for a quest, but okay. That's good to know.
Yep.
It's good to know.
Which is also kind of bringing people in, because they really did very well with this update on taking people throughout the entire area, and then basically they gave you the reward to, hey, go check out this piece as well, which is the Paterdomus. You know, go underneath there and you can get a reward. So I think going forward, that's going to be Jagex sort of strategy to get people to check out content. They used to do the early bird special, and they still kind of do it, you know, like the first 2 weeks an update comes out, you get a little bit of a bonus. But as you can see with this, they're doing. I completely lost my train of thought. But what I was going, with the rewards, just giving a little bit of rewards just to sort of explore. They had mentioned a couple weeks ago that's what they're going to be doing with NXT. There's going to be sort of a tour of NXT. You go around, and to encourage this, they're actually going to be giving like XP lamps and stuff. So, I mean, it's not going to be anything substantial, but it's still something to give everybody a kick in the butt to sort of go check it out. So I kind of like the way they're approaching that. So.
Yeah, and you know, part of me wonders is it unfortunate that we're at a situation where we need to give out large amounts of XP, 100K plus in the case of the statues, in order to get people to partake in content?
See, I don't know. Part of me thinks it's just sort of the demographic and just the entire. But when I say demographic, I'm sort of referring to just the level rather than. Sort of age or whatever. Going forward, as of you and I and most of our peers, we've been playing for, you know, over 6-7 years, consider ourselves in the high level community. I can actually say that I haven't done a holiday event in like a year and a half, and I used to do it like religiously, and now it's like I just really can't be bothered if it's not like a really cool reward or if it's like a decent boost or something. I usually just, you know, it's part of me being lazy, but I think a lot of high level players are sort of like, you know, why do I want to go and chase the Easter Bunny down to get a couple chocolate egg overrides when I could be, you know, sitting here either bossing or, you know, training for 120s or something like that. So I think that's sort of their approach to sort of get the higher level players back into the sort of little fun event things and, you know, sort of introduce them into content. So
that's a very interesting perspective because, I mean, I find the whole lore side of the Myrec storyline, you know, interesting, as is the quest as well. So there's that. But on the other hand, I mean, it's just something that, like, the statues are no big deal, I find, because you can just do them and they're right there. And chances are you probably already have the item in your bank if you, you know, keep quest items around. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But the plushie hunt was really hard to get me going on.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's something that I enjoyed doing once I started, but it's like, oh, why am I running around looking for these plushies? It's not going to help me out. And I guess at this point in the game, we're all kind of suffering from this kind of mentality that, oh, we did all this mundane stuff back in the day. Why do we have to do it today? I guess that's the way to look at it.
And, you know, thinking on it now, that's probably why they made it a completionist requirement, because they knew that people wouldn't go on like a mini scavenger hunt just for, you know, 2K magic XP and, you know, something like that. That's probably why they made it a completionist requirement to sort of appeal to that demographic of high level players. Honestly, that's the only reason I did it. I would have never touched it unless it was a completionist requirement or something that was in my ultimate goal. But yeah, that's kind of the mode I'm in right now, though, is just completionist requirement, trim requirements, and stuff like that. So I think that was their approach there. So,
I mean, you get this when you complete it.
Get this into your soul. The others don't love you like I do.
The others don't love you like I do.
And going back to what you said, I think it would have probably been in their better interest to make it a pet. Again, the higher level players seem to sort of have pet fever now.
Yep.
Everyone's sort of approaching insane final battle.
That's why people go bossing, is to get pets.
Yep. And that's pretty much the clan that I'm in. That's mostly what it is. People just talking about, oh, you know, them quit chatting their kills and hitting thresholds and stuff like that. It really has become Petscape almost. So I'm surprised they didn't sort of feed into that archetype that they've sort of created for their own game.
Well, I, for one, I'm glad that Clan Quest still focuses on the actual game itself and not necessarily just the pet hunt.
Right.
That's all to all you guys out there listening in Clan Quest. Good job. But, I mean, I kind of joked when this update came out. We were discussing it a little bit after it came out. Oh, there's no pet override. Oh, that must be next week's Solo Month's tour promotion.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what does that say? You know, you're wondering why something in-game isn't a microtransaction.
That kind of worries. To be fair, it hasn't arrived yet, but...
That's true. That's true. But... April is not over. We still have the quest week, so... Keep our fingers crossed or uncrossed, depending on where you stand with that. So.
And I mean, in some ways, we just summed up every current state of the game. Everyone
exactly.
is focused on, you know, what they want to do. And if the value is not there, people will not do it. There needs to be a perceived value behind each update. And going along that same track, I'm happy that both these updates are actually permanent fixtures in-game.
Exactly. And, you know, I think... they've done fairly well to sort of keep this under control, because I feel like this sort of mentality could get out of hand really quick and only feed the fire of quote-unquote Easyscape, which is what a lot of old-school players call RS3. That's their biggest thing. It's like, oh, you can get so much XP, you can get so much XP, da-da-da-da-da. I think they're balancing it within reason to not be completely OP. But with the Easter update... prime example of trying to get high-level players in, the rewards were actually a lot of high-level invention components. And, you know, as we all know, that has been everybody has invention fever as well, trying to get components and trying to break stuff down and find an efficient ways to do it. But, yeah, a lot of the components and rewards you could get if you disassembled them, it was actually worth quite a bit of money if you were to actually buy the stuff and disassemble them yourself. So going forward, I think they're definitely trying to balance out how they're bringing in everyone to these little updates that really don't have much value. So,
yeah, and ultimately it's just an evolution of the game, because
yeah,
what is the state of RuneScape today, you know, wasn't necessarily the state of RuneScape back in 08 or 2010. So
right.
as a result, Jagex just needs to continue and adapt to it. And I think that's something that MMOs have found, is that they have to live and adapt or else they die.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, like, I don't play World of Warcraft, so I don't know what its following is like today. But is there as much of a dedicated following inside World of Warcraft as you find inside RuneScape? That's something I'd like to know.
Depends on what you mean by dedicated. I know that right now... I've actually looked at some stats, and the game is actually at one of the lowest points it's been since the release of Vanilla, especially after them shutting down that private server a couple weeks ago. It peaked around Wrath of the Lich King and Cataclysm, and then that's when they started just altering parts of the game, because up until, like, Cataclysm, they were... adding content to the game. They were adding more features. You know, they were improving the game. They were evolving the game, just as most MMOs do. With Cataclysm and then everything after that, they started dumbing stuff down. They started watering it down. Everything was easy. You could start buying character boosts. It was just, and that's when their numbers started falling. And, you know, looking at the numbers, I really don't think it is as much of a loyal following as RS. A lot of people in RS that got mad with Evolution of Combat have come back and played old school. Granted, the community is divided, but it's still around the same game. And I know a lot of people, including myself, that used to play WoW quite a bit, and I really don't touch it anymore. I'll play an expansion for a month when it comes out, and after that, I'm done. There's no point. Like I said, they're watering it down. It's just they've kind of just killed their own game, and a lot of people are actually quitting and not coming back, which is why, you know, around Cataclysm there was about 10 million subscribers, and right now there's only about 2 million to 1 million.
It's only
dropping.
Well, that answers the question then.
Yeah.
And, you know, in regards to that, I think that JX has probably done a better job than Blizzard in terms of keeping up and adapting with the community then.
Right.
And as much as we don't like what we see, some of us, in terms of, you know, oh, we need to get a certain amount of XP in order to be able to encourage people to come check out these updates, it is something JX has to do to keep on pace with the community.
Yep.
So, anyways, there's one more part of this Mauritanian madness update that we should talk about, and that's the Ravenous Gulls. You can find them in a little entrance just off to the west of where the memorial statues are. You go down there, and there's a bunch of them to fight. They're not too hard. They're weak to magic, but if you have any high-level combat, you can probably take them out with any combat type you so desire. I use melee. They're level 105. They have 14.5k life points each. They don't really do too much now, but after the quest, and I quote, "Ravenous Gulls might not prove to be too daunting when fought one-on-one, but with the release of River of Blood, you will be able to awaken a greater bloodlust in them by equipping the upcoming pocket slot items."
Mm.
So there's
sort
that.
Of the same mechanic as the men and women in with the Wolfbane in Caniphus, I guess, to sort of level them up when you're carrying something.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess that is probably what this needs, because overall they're not too difficult right now, and they're empty as it is, so obviously people don't find value in fighting them currently. But they do drop something called Congealed Blood, which is an update that will be used with the upcoming Blood Essence from the River of Blood quest. I'm not sure exactly what that'll do, but obviously since these drop in large amounts of quantities, it's going to be something that we'll be seeing more of in the next coming weeks. So I don't know, maybe it might be wise to camp the creatures in Mauritania and get Congealed Blood.
Yeah, they mention a pocket slot item, and then Congealed Blood, which will be used after the quest. So I'm almost wondering if the pocket slot the pocket slot item is going to be something similar to the ectoplasmator, to where it works on like ghouls and creatures of Mauritania, and then you use the Congealed Blood to sort of charge it, like you do with the ectoplasmator. And it sort of it has some sort of effect, maybe extra XP or I don't know. There might be some other reward that you can gain favor with or something with the quest. But I'm sort of wondering if the Congealed Blood is going to be tied to that pocket slide item. So I guess we'll just have to find out.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. So anything at this point is just conjecture. But these are not common drops. Their class is uncommon. They drop in quantities anywhere from 3 to 15. So they don't come quick. So you will need to camp there if you want to get a good chunk of them. Alrighty, well, should we move on to the patch notes then?
We shall.
Oh, and one more thing. If you want a story recap of everything that's happened in the Myrex series so far, just speak to Amelia or Rory in Burg de Rot. They'll give you a nice recap of everything that's happened, and of course you can also watch this week's behind the scenes video as well, in which Maude Osborne does the same thing. Alright, so tweaks and fixes this week in the patch notes. I'm going to start off with perhaps the most interesting one there is here, and that is that monthly D&D tokens can now be used to reset the Oyster D&D.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it really is, because that is a lot of farming XP and woodcutting XP down there, mm-hmm. plus treasure hunter items.
Yep.
So
treasure hunter or treasure trail?
Treasure hunter.
Oh, okay.
You basically open it up and you get a certain number of treasure hunter items. It's basically a roll on, I believe, the medium and the hard treasure trail table. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So you should definitely do that quest, Dave. That's a tutorial island quest.
Oh, I've done it.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, moving on from that, players can no longer use walk overrides to boost their moving speed during the Tears of Guthix activity. Because, you know, they have that joyous or happy thing, and it makes you move faster.
I actually didn't know that actually made you move faster. I thought that was just cosmetic. Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too, but apparently it's fast enough that it can have an impact in Tears of Guthix. So interesting that this was caught after all that time. And, you know, I bet the people who were using these overrides did not report this as a bug.
Oh, absolutely not.
Because if you're going to use something like this, I mean, I think the vast majority of the RS community would not report something like this as a bug.
And I find it interesting that this probably would have still been under the radar if it wasn't for Fist of Guthix being in the spotlight a couple days ago, actually.
Oh, why Fist of Guthix?
Or, I'm sorry, Tears of Guthix. Oh, never mind. I'm thinking of the wrong thing. Okay. Nope. Never mind. All right.
Yeah, they both have of Guthix in there. Oh, one involves a fist and one is tears.
Yep, gotcha. Okay.
The kill count multiplier is now cleared when logging out or leaving the heart. Okay, I was wondering about that when I first went to check it out, because the multiplier remained. All bridges now appear on the world map in the heart, so that's good, so you can click nice. Easier. Hellweir's Cywear Alpha is no longer failed to spawn. I heard some issues about that, so that's good that that has been fixed.
Yep.
Scrimshaws will now degrade by 10% instead of 20% if unprotected when reclaiming from death. That's good.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, I think that anytime you die or you decide to, you know, go the gravestone route rather than paying death, I think that the degrade mechanics are a little bit too harsh. So it was nice to see this one fixed.
This is a nice little buff or fix, but it's not like out of control. So that's good.
Yeah. And I mean, one should even question if a scrimshaw should be degrading at all if you're reclaiming it from death.
Right.
Because nothing else degrades when you reclaim from death, you just pay. So maybe assign some kind of arbitrary value to the scrimshaws and that would help.
Mm-hmm.
Increase the cooldown between potential active effects of the Bandos God Book, which is Bandos Book of War. So they increased the cooldown. We do not know what the cooldown was prior to this. But they also reduce the cooldown between potential active effects of the other five God Books when they're triggered. So I don't know what the limitation on how often that could happen, but the other ones have been lessened and the Bandos one has been increased. But what I can tell you is that they did increase the chance of all six God Books' active effects triggering when off cooldown. It used to be 5%, so if I was to make a sane guess, I would say probably somewhere around 10 now, maybe.
I think that's safe to say.
Which is good. I mean, that's 1 in 10, so I mean, it's not nearly as bad as some other effects. I think that the ring from player-owned ports is somewhere around 2 or 3%, which is relatively remote. So as long as you're doing attacks quickly, you should see a bigger benefit from using these books. And like I said previously, you don't necessarily hear about these books because people often will have other things that they want to put in their pocket item slot. So maybe
maybe
this was indeed a buff that was needed. I don't know. Improve the chance of Godbook specials activating in Legacy mode, which is something we don't normally think about because Legacy mode has an inherently slower combat tick system.
Yep.
Lunar armor has been restatted to tier 60 power armor. Previously, it used to require 40 magic, or rather 40 defense and 65 magic to use. So tier 60 power armor is going to make it something really good for people leveling up, because if you think tier 70, that's God Wars. So, whoa,
yeah,
I can get this after doing a quest now.
That's a pretty nice fix, definitely.
Yeah. And, I mean, I personally am not a fan of power armor because it just lets all that extra damage in. But other people want to just emphasize on doing damage, then this is an excellent update.
Yep.
And you ready for this one? This is a real hilarious one. The Department of Health, in a joint venture with the Port Sarum Committee for Responsible Gambling, the Keldegrim Local Brewers Association, and the Ardoyans Can't Fancier Chapter, have united to shut down the rat pits in their towns and cities. Felcrash is still hanging out around Port Sarum for those looking for a way to train a wily cat, and the Falador task, fun for the whole family, is now kitty litter for those yet to complete it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be real here. When was the last time you went to do rat pits?
Exactly, and I'm wondering if this is the first of many sort of old dead content clearing out. Because I know there's been rumors, and I think I've said it before, of them doing away with mobilizing armies or sort of making it into something else.
I heard it was on the books for a substantial rework one way or another. Yeah. So, but I mean, this kind of thing, as much as I don't like to see things removed from the game because it seems as though it violates continuity, though I don't know how important Rat Pits was.
Right.
But if they can come up with something better, and I mean, like I said, who played Rat Pits and what was really the point of it?
Yeah.
Back then, aside from, you know, the cat training medal. And today, well, you just have the cat follow you around and then it'll become overgrown and then, well, you can take the cat from there by talking to this person.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know if this is a good thing because it's removing content from the game and, I mean, just look, when was the last time you saw someone with a cat following them around unless they're a cat person?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this was prime content back when cat was pretty much, even before summoning, when cat was like the pet. And then, you know, they released summoning, you had the dogs and you had, you know, the geckos and all that stuff. And then came boss pets and, you know, it's sort of evolved. And this really is like, in every sense of the word, 110% obsolete content that nobody ever uses. So it doesn't justify them just removing stuff that doesn't get used, but I think out of all the content, this was probably their best bet with cleaning something out, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of felt the same way when Romeo and Juliet was removed, but at the same time, Romeo and Juliet is not a RuneScape story.
Right, exactly.
So, I don't know. I'd like to hear from the listeners maybe of what they think about this, because it just doesn't feel right, but it kind of needs to happen, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah.
So, anyways, anything else in the patch notes from you that you found interesting this week?
Nope, don't believe so.
Yeah, it was kind of light in terms of fixes, aside from, you know, the obvious God Wars 2 fixes and the bug fixes that needed to happen in the combat buffs, so we'll just leave it at that. But there is something that you can purchase this week that is not a Solomon store promotion, and that is a real life Pack Yak plushie.
I think that's pretty funny, and it kind of ties in. I like the way they tie that in with the finding the plushies in game. I think that was a nice little transition.
Yeah, I'd still like the ability to order a plushie for your own character.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's see. It says does not come with 30 rock tails. dimensions 36 centimeters by 20 by 22 centimeters. So that's almost 2 feet long.
And, that's actually pretty big.
Yeah, and 3 feet wide or long, deep, I don't know.
Yeah.
But $39.99 Canadian, I'm not sure what the U.S. prices is, but this starts shipping on June 4th. So if you're not interested in giving your money away for the next month and a half, then probably wait and hold off on this to purchase it, because you're going to be sinking a lot of money and have it not appear until at least the very start of June. And with that being said, shipping is also needs to be added on to this. So that's $39.99 Canadian plus shipping. So very expensive indeed. And I mean, I guess if you really do enjoy RuneScape, then this is probably something you'd purchase. Were you saying you would purchase one of these, Dave?
I don't know. I might. It was just sort of an inside joke with some friends of mine. I just think it'd be funny. But if it's, I guess I didn't realize it was that expensive. I don't really know if that's worth it or not.
Yeah, $37.50 USD.
Yeah, when the time comes, I guess I'll assess it. But I definitely probably won't be pre-ordering it.
So. Well, you guys could get one to share.
There you go. Hey, that makes it all the better.
And then,
right?
And then bring it around when you play RuneScape at your little gatherings.
Trade off every week.
Oh, yeah. But the Pack Yak, I never thought I'd see a real life Pack Yak from RuneScape in game. But, not suitable for children 0 to 3 years.
They're not high enough level to use it.
There you go. All righty. Well, this week's Treasure Hunter promotion is the return of the Dragon Trinkets. So these have a number of benefits, including 5% chance to insta-kill a dragon, awarding additional Slayer XP for slaying a dragon without needing a specific Slayer task, auto-noting and auto-eluting of bones, bars, and hides, teleport to a dragon location for the cost of 5 trinkets. These do not work on the King Black Dragon, the Queen Black Dragon, or Celestial Dragons. They only work on the Chromatic and Metallic Dragons. But you can receive 1,700 Slayer XP, for example, from the Queen Black Dragon if you manage to proc that, but that'll cost 950 trinkets.
That's quite a bit for only 1,700.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not really versed on the rated, which
or
you
no.
get them.
Actually, there's two columns here. Maybe it's 15, but because there's two trinket columns, I'm not entirely sure how that works. But anyways, cost of auto-looting a bone is 3 trinkets at the Rune Dragons, 2 at the Addy Dragons, 1 at the Mithril Dragons, and 1 at Bronze and Steel and Iron. You know, I could see the looting part of this being interesting because, I mean, I know there's not people necessarily out there that do this today, but back in the olden days, there would be people who would fight dragons for their hides and then craft them and then train prayer with that. And you know what I was going to do, but the need for 95 prayers succeeded my ability to wait, is I was going to train ranged and prayer by gathering dragon bones and then using the bones myself that I got and get 99 ranged and 99 prayer doing that. But obviously I had to get prayer beforehand. So, I mean, I have a whole lot of these in my bank. So, maybe it might be worth it going to the Rune Dragons, gathering some rune bars and rune dragon bones.
There you go. Yeah, I'm not sure if I think I have some. I'm not sure if I have any in my bank. I'll have to check that out. And I might
yeah,
because
I got
Father
a
Hunt.
Lot of them on the first run. So
yeah.
Oh, I see. You got to convert between metallic and chromatic trinkets. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Okay. So it's going to be expensive to do that.
Yeah, but, of course.
But I mean, they come in large enough quantities on Treasure Hunter, so it's not too big of a deal. And I think the last thing I want to say on this Treasure Hunter update is that this is actually a lot less overpowered than last week's Treasure Hunter update.
Oh my! And you know what? Honestly, anything is falls in that category right now, which you know, I'm glad to see. They're not getting too carried away, but I still think last week was a bit unacceptable. But
yes,
listen to last week's episode if you want to hear me rant about that.
There we go. All right, so and then we got the behind the scenes, including the abridged vampire story by Maud Osborne. So you can give that a watch on their YouTube channel or the behind the scenes news posting. So there's that. And this weekend, you can start preloading the NXT client for Monday when that is released.
Yes, I would strongly recommend that because anybody that's been in the gaming scene for more than a year knows that launches for clients and expansions or what have you tend to be quite a toll on these servers. So I think this is very smart for them to offer this, and I strongly encourage everyone to go get it now, just so it's a smooth launch on Monday. So
yeah, definitely. And if you have the client from the previous beta, that can be updated as well, so you don't need to do a complete re-download of all the assets. So there's to reduce the amount of bandwidth that you have to consume on that, but. Anyways, yeah, it's going to be so great to do this quest finally in the NXT client, and I think that this is a perfect week to release it. Granted, we would have liked to have seen it this week for the Mauritania Madness or Mauritania run-through, but obviously we couldn't get that. So
yeah,
because if you just look at some of the videos that are in this behind-the-scenes video, it's like, I feel so constrained with all the fog and whatnot. It's kind of hard to move through the area and immerse myself fully without the NXT client. So yeah. I'll be able to move beyond that and have a superb experience for when the quest finally is released. Alrighty, so I believe that's it for RS content this week, or RS news. Anything else before we move on to the questions?
I think that should be it.
Alright, well, we have an audio question this week from the RR Man, addressed specifically to Dave once again, so I will give that a play right now.
Dear Dave, hello, I am the RR Man. I'm here to formally apologize for a mistake I've made many years ago. I'm sorry that I took the beautiful intro you created and plagiarized the shit out of it, as the kids would say. I am deeply, deeply appalled at my actions, but rest assured, I'll unfortunately probably make this mistake again. Now, if you accept my apology, I would like to ask you a question. I hear you're an architect, so building on that, can I ask, do you like the construction skill? Does it measure up after all these years? If you were Jagex and you were to draw up some new updates for this, what ideas would you have? How would you pencil them in? Peace out.
I like what he did there. Build, measure,
yeah,
draw
there was
up,
quite a few little undertones in there. It's I definitely picked up on those, so I can appreciate that. That's awesome. Very creative. First of all... To be fair, I honestly didn't know you did it, so you probably could have got away with it with the whole plagiarizing. It is all good, though. I formally accept your apology. No worries. I'm actually flattered that that you want to use it, but you have my formal permission now to keep plagiarizing the shit out of it. So anyway, moving forward, do I like the construction skill? Absolutely. Probably in my top three, and I know I say that about like six different skills, but you know, I love the skill. Is it up to par? Not even remotely. The skill has not been touched hardly since 2006 when it was released.
We got the aquarium last year.
Got the aquarium, and I think we got a couple other
menagerie.
Little, yep. Granted, those were just like extra little rooms. I don't really consider that much of an update since it. The menagerie, literally all it had to do with construction was to have a requirement and then you put your pets in it. Same with, pardon me, same with the aquarium. You built the thing with the construction requirement and then you spend 50 hours fishing to fill it up. Definitely not up to par. It needs a rework. More so, in my opinion, than mining and smithing. Mining and smithing have seen... updates. We have the Artisan's Workshop. That really wasn't much of a rework, but it sort of refreshed the skill. In my opinion, there really hasn't been any sort of refreshing element to construction. Even the graphics are pretty much the exact same as they've been since release.
Oh, yeah, you turn your graphics all the way down to min and you got 2006 style RuneScape.
Exactly. So, I mean, construction has not seen much love at all. It could use some big time improvements. And moving forward with that, what would I draw up? Some suggestions. It's really hard to say, which is probably why this hasn't seen a rework or sort of being considered for a rework by Jagex, because it is quite a difficult thing to sort of develop content for. I guess just off the bat... I would add a lot more rooms. I would overhaul the graphics, sort of add more tiers to additional hotspots. You got like Demonic Throne, obviously doesn't serve too much purpose, but I don't think it's that high of a requirement. Like all the high level requirements for each room really aren't high level. It's usually like in the 70s or 80s. Very rarely do we see any sort of 90... to 99 sort of requirements that are actually useful. I would add a lot more hotspots. It would be nice to sort of lay out your rooms in the way that you can lay out your aquarium rather than having, okay, you can only put a chair right here or you can only put a fireplace, you know, right here. Have it sort of, you know, you can lay it out to where you have an object, a piece of furniture you can make, and then you place it on the grid. So it really is customizable. So with people with, you know, open altars and stuff, you know, there can be like an optimal layout and stuff like that. As well, I think that each room should not have a predetermined amount of doors that you can access with. I think you should be able to build a room with however many doors you want and then place your furniture accordingly, because the only reason there's a set amount of entrances to a room is because of the predetermined hotspots. So I think if they can lift both of those up, they can really sort of refresh the skill and add a lot more stuff. You know, once they do that, like I said, you can add more hotspots. I don't even want to go as far as to say at a bank chest, because then training prayer would be absolutely ridiculous.
No.
That is something that should never be done. But I definitely think there's a lot more things that can sort of be added, whether it's sort of a daily sort of collect stuff out of your cabinets or, you know, your bookshelf or, you know, what have you. I think they could definitely they could revisit it without sort of making it super OP. So that's kind of what I would do, just sort of thinking right off the bat.
Yeah, so. And I mean, when the aquarium came out, we basically said, and I think we were told, that this is a concept of what a modern construction room would look like, how you can place items and whatnot wherever you want, which is something that should have happened when construction first came out, but obviously they didn't have the technical ability to do that then with the game client and game engine.
Right. And something they've actually talked about, they've been throwing this around probably since 2010, is actually sort of being in the, you know, being like a clan citadel, you can actually be sort of in the same plane as like your friends.
Yeah.
So you can sort of have neighbors, yeah. I think would be cool.
Surface world construction, they called that.
Yeah.
And if you recall, construction came out before farming.
Yes.
So as a result, farming in effect uses the same kind of technology that construction uses, except it's on the surface world rather than an instanced map square. Because if you think about it, you go to the Cathar B farming patch, you see your own crops there, but everyone else sees their own crops. So that's an interesting way that you could do surface world construction with something like that.
And, you know, speaking of that, Add farming patch. There you go. Add like one of each farming patch you could add to a garden or something.
We really voted for the greenhouse last year, and it didn't come through.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's just, I think, and bringing construction to the surface, I think, would be advised. Because, like, you know, like you were saying, the technology is there. It just needs to be applied. So.
Yeah. And you know, part of the problem why I never went back and made it, you know, surface world when it first came out, is that construction was so contained in its own little instancing environment that it would have been too hard to move it out into a surface world thing. Right. Once they realized that they could do something like that with the farming skill. So not only is it complex in terms of, you know, they designed a whole new system for it with the engine, but they had to basically put all these items for the construction skill in game. And at the time, the construction skill was the single largest game update that brought items into the game. So it was massive. I mean, trying to catalog everything that you can get from construction on our end was massive as well, you know, like cups of tea, the
right
stuff like that. All the planks, for example, those didn't exist beforehand. So that was that. And then plus you had all the things you could make and get experience with in construction.
Flat packs all those and all kind of, that.
Yeah. So truly a massive skill. And I think that's why we didn't have any update to it, is because it was so huge that it was just a very hard thing to change without reworking the entire skill, which, I mean, at this point they said they're not going to do. They're just going to focus on surface world construction, maybe add a room here and there. Which is kind of unfortunate because the whole construction system feels clunky. So
yeah, definitely.
But it is what it is. And, you know, we could have chose that on the poll at the tail end of last year, but mining and smithing rework won out for 2016. So maybe 2017, perhaps?
We can only hope.
Yeah, indeed. All righty. Thank you, Mr. RR Man. Good questions. This next one is from Trekkie. If you were to create a new quest / mini quest where you get to pick 5 NPCs from around the RS, knowing full well 3 of them shall die heroic death, who would they be, and what is the quest like, and how did they die? Oh boy, 5 NPCs. All right, so let's just name off a few here. Wise Old Man, Hans from Lumbridge, Sir Tiffy from the White Knights. There's 3, and then let's just go with people from various cities. Let's just go I'm having trouble picking NPCs that I would send on a quest, which is unfortunate. Okay, so we got Sir Tiffy, Hans, and the Wise Old Man. I'm just gonna take the easy way out on this and say the signature heroes plus the Wise Old Man. How does that sound?
There you go. Fair enough.
So the quest would have to be a quest after Sliskay's endgame, and it would involve dealing with the Elder God threat that we could ultimately be running up against at some point in the future. So there's that. Now, how did they die? All right, so we got Ariane, Ozan, Sir Tiffy, Hans, and the Wise Old Man. Oh, all right, there's my characters. Okay, so how did they die? Well, let's just say right now that the Wise Old Man is going to be the one who is going to die the embarrassing death at the very beginning of the quest, because he foolishly tries to harvest the power of one of the Elder Gods. So we got that. And then let's just say then that Ozan gets killed in a trap because he has to deal with thieving. So he's trying to disarm some kind of trap somewhere, and then that ultimately kills him, allowing us to go forward. And then, well, let's also put Sir Tiffy out of his misery since he's old then. He dies in the final battle against one of the things that one of the Elder Gods summons up. And there you go. That's the storyline in a nutshell, and I fully don't expect any of these storylines to ultimately appear in-game, but I think it'd be interesting to see some of the core characters of the game unite around the Elder God threat once this problem is dealt with. And maybe, who knows, maybe it could even be Zaros trying to deal with Zaros, because we know he wants to ascend to be an Elder God, so... I'll have to go with that. And Trekkie, I read this, but I'll save this after we see what Dave's answer is. But you saw what I did with the Wise Old Man, I assume. So, Dave, do you have any that you would pick, and what would you do to them?
Well, as you all know, I'm not Mr. Lore. But just sort of quickly, just to touch base with the quest that's actually the freshest in my mind. I actually think it would be kind of cool to have a sort of a quest similar to Nomad's Elegy, in the fact of having all of the key NPCs that died in While Guthic Sleeps sort of have like a send-off quest for them. And I know it's they're not going to die, but I would, you know, like Duradel.
Well, they're dead already, so I mean, right. they have died. So
well, it's like they're sort of all dead, but you sort of go and maybe sort of take care of each one's last little request before they sort of, you know, pass on or whatever. And it's kind of like a final goodbye, because, you know, being not the lore person I am, doing Nomad's Elegy, you know, I was flying through the dialogue. And at the end of the quest, I was, you know, speaking to Hazelmir and all the little cave goblin, I forget her name.
Zanuck,
yeah. And, like, some of the, just the, like, the little one-liners and some of the dialogue was, like, that's like kind of deep. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, these characters are like, they're dead. And it's like, okay, we finally like made peace with everything. And it's like, all right, goodbye. It's like, oh wow. It's kind of like, you know, tugged on a heartstring there. It's like, you know, that's kind of cool for somebody that really doesn't get into lore. That kind of struck me in a weird way, but I think that would be cool. For the signature hero, well, I don't want to say signature heroes, but the biggest heroes that sort of that got killed off in Wildgothic Sleeps. And it doesn't even have to be along the same lines of Wildgothic Sleeps, obviously, since that sort of has progressed in its own direction. Just sort of be like a, I don't want to say last rites, but just sort of taking care of stuff in the overworld to sort of have a nice send-off and a little bit of closure to them. And, you know, they could sort of tie in their little perception of what they were thinking during Wildgothic Sleep. So sort of like a side little tangent arcs there.
Yeah, you could do that, because cool. The only one we saw in Nomad's Elegy was Hazelmere, I believe. Right. So you could send the rest of them off, because there are quite a few of them that died in Wildgothic Sleep. So
that was quite a surprise, honestly. Like when Wildgothic Sleep came out, and that was the, you know, biggest quest. Like I know when I found out what happened, I was like, oh my gosh, like they killed off a Slayer Master. Like that was like, holy cow, that was like a big deal. So like sort of tying that stuff up when they're like taking major characters out of the game, I think there's definitely some storytelling potential there that they could really capitalize on. So
yeah, and I mean, that was the first time that they did that. So it would be an interesting thing to look at, you know, just celebrating 15 years of RuneScape. Mm-hmm. So there's that, and plus,
and they could honestly, with that whole like idea, they could give Death sort of his own arc as well, because he sort of came in with the whole gravestone, and you know, it all started with the Halloween event when he would come and reap your soul when you died for, you know, a month in October back in like 2006 and 2007, and he's really sort of made his entrance more into the, you know, the Sliskay storyline, Nomad, stuff like that. He's really becoming quite a prominent character in the game, and I think they can also. You know, again, I don't know lore. They might already be doing this. I don't know, and I'm going to feel stupid if they have. But there's also some potential there with sort of developing his character and his impact on the overworld.
Yeah, they did that in Missing Presumed Death, one of the first quests in the Sliskay arc. They gave him a bit of a lore and storyline there. But I do think your idea of revisiting the dead from Wildgothic Sleeps is a good idea, and you know, it could potentially be a novice or a medium quest, which we don't see too much of these days. And plus, they could also do it in the form of a bottle quest that wouldn't take up too many resources, and it would, you know, just give a nice way of looking at what these people died for and ultimately where we're at. It might be kind of like a nice epilogue to the Sliskay series, actually.
Yeah, and Trek, you mentioned, you know, new quest or mini quest. You know, it could also be a neat little thing to implement as a mini quest, sort of similar to the God Emissary mechanic, to where, you know, it's almost like a Slayer thing. You go and, you know, you do tasks for the big NPCs that have died in quests. You know, they could make that a comp requirement or something. They could sort of make it to where, you know, you have a list of NPCs that you help. You know, you access it obviously via Death's office, but it's sort of like a little mini quest deal. And, you know, you can unlock more stuff from, you know, Death's shop or, you know, whatever, what have you.
Right.
It could be implemented within a, you know, a storytelling quest, or it could be sort of just a little mini quest, mini game.
You know, for not being interested in quests all that much, I think you definitely came up with the better quest idea here today.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. I'm thinking on the fly here, so I'm glad it was well-received.
Yeah, and then Trek, he says, plot twist. Of the five you just picked, one of them will pull a Tasha Yar from Star Trek, i.e. die a meaningless death. And that's why I said the wise old man will die his meaningless death. There you go. So, and whereas yours are already dead, I think that's a perfect way of approaching this question.
Yeah.
So we'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Trekkie, for that question, and two different ways of answering it, and two different kinds of quests, so that's what we like to hear. So if you guys want to send us questions, or you want us to discuss a certain topic, or I think that's the way you phrased it, Dave, we'll ask you guys, or they'll ask us a discussion topic, and then we'll talk about it on the show, right?
Yep.
So if you want to do that question or discussion topic, just email them to questions@rsbnb.com. leave us a voicemail on Google Voice at 571-57-BNB or 571-572-2632. That's the number. It is an American number, so be careful if you are out of country, as that might cost you a little bit. Or you can just DM us on Twitter at RSBNB. DMs are now open for everyone, regardless of if we follow you. So please be nice, do not spam us, and send us your questions one way or another. All right. Shall we move on to the questions? I mean, the tech news?
Yes.
So, this week, Facebook had a little announcement. They had their annual developers conference called F8, which is basically a way of Facebook saying, here's what we're working on for the next year and where we're going to go with some of our products. And they are really getting behind their Messenger platform. So anybody who has a Facebook account does have the ability to use Facebook Messenger. And there were some statistics that came out this week that, you know, Messenger combined with WhatsApp is indeed more popular than SMS. Messenger and WhatsApp combined send upwards of 60 billion messages a week, whereas SMS is around 20 billion. So Messenger among Facebook users has really taken off and replaced the way people communicate with one another. So as a result, they are getting fully behind their messaging platform this week, allowing people to write code that hooks into the Messenger application to do interesting things. Some examples they give are the ability of, you know, looking up various news from CNN, for example, checking in with your boarding passes to various airlines. So it'll be time for you to board your flight. You'll get a message from that airline, and then you'll be able to check in with that as an option. And basically just making messaging more intelligent. Now, you might wonder, why is this needed when we have things like virtual assistants and apps in order to do this? Well, the simple answer is that, well, Facebook wants to keep you on the Facebook platform and in their applications. Makes sense, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they're doing this by way of something called bots, which are essentially applications that respond to your text-written queries, and then they update with pertinent information. So examples they gave, in addition to news, were being able to purchase flowers from 1-800-Flowers. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that this is, like, I mean, obviously for Facebook users, it's going to keep people in the platform, right?
In theory, yes.
Because the alternative is to use an app like CNN or 1-800-Flowers and leave the Messenger application and then take it from there, I assume. Right. So, it's just a little odd to me because I thought a number of years ago we were getting behind our virtual assistants, you know, Siri, Cortana, Google Now, and then now we're going back to text-based input and help, so.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're complete methods, but just sort of knee-jerk reaction, I feel like it's going to be a lot clunkier than it should be. And I feel like they're trying to filter way too much stuff into a Messenger app, because I feel like that's only going to lead to more spam and advertisements within a chat. You know, it really comes down to how lazy are people going to be. And I know that sounds bad, but I mean, news is nice, but we start getting into like shopping and you don't want to go to an Amazon app and you just want to be in chat and type something to like buy it. Sure, it's convenient, but that can also get pretty dangerous at the same time. Aside from that, like I said, I don't really see how this can be implemented to be as smooth as it should be. Again, like you said, you know, we've made quite a leap with the, you know, the voice assistant. I feel it kind of retroactive or counterproductive is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
To sort of revert back to text-based stuff. Because I remember back before smartphones, you could do that. You could text the Google number and ask it a question.
Right.
And it's like that was back when I had a flip phone, you know, back in the arcade.
And I mean, we're going back to that, except now it's with the Messenger application. And granted, it's a more rich experience, but I mean, this just seems like a gamble by Facebook in order to make money, because as it is, you can get all this kind of information and then you can say, find me a flower shop, and they'll find you the nearest flower shop, and then you can ask your phone to call it for you, and you'll be done. So there's that. But with this, it's actually selling stuff and letting you do that. So obviously, this is where Facebook feels it needs to go to stay relevant, and then tailor these to all the likes that people have been curating around you for the however many years you've been using the website.
So. Yeah, and I mean, you know, just again, thinking on the fly here, it's sort of reminding me generally about television. Everybody had television, and then they started bringing the smart TV to where your television was pretty much a computer. You know, thinking of SMS and messaging as a TV, now they're wanting to bring all these apps to be nested within this app. You know, it could go either way. With Facebook being as big as they are and as many people that are using the platform, I feel they are definitely established enough to sort of take some liberty in trying things out. I'll be interested to see how it works. I can't really say that I'll be using the heck out of it. I still SMS for most of my messaging. There's a few people that I strictly use Facebook for different reasons. But I don't know. I personally don't see it taking off. But then again, I still don't really see a point in smart TVs. I think, you know, they have their uses.
Maybe we're in the wrong audience camp, because I don't see use for smart TVs either. I mean, there's an Xbox One and an Apple TV to satisfy the functions of a smart TV. So, but anyways, I mean, I don't have this application, so I don't know if you have Facebook Messenger on your phone.
Yeah, I do. Yep.
If you go to the part where you add a new contact, do you see a bots section?
Let me check.
And while you're doing that, I'll just say that while people have wanted to test out these bots this week, it hasn't gone swimmingly. There have been people having problems understanding exactly what the bot wanted. So, for example, one said, "What's the weather in Houston this weekend?" And it said, "The weather in Houston, Texas, is 77 degrees Fahrenheit and mostly cloudy." Then the actual person replies, "No, this weekend." Then, get this, the bot says, "To do, match weekend forecast requests." So the bot just completely lost it there. It didn't miss the part that it wanted on the weekend. So obviously, still some early teething issues with this.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything with the bots, but I might not have the completely updated version. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't see it going too far, but they've proved me wrong before. So
and if anything, I've learned Facebook users are sheep. So
that is correct.
Sorry, anyone out there who uses that, but that is the vast majority of people who use Facebook.
Which is why I think, like I said, you know, they're so established, even if it sort of does flop, it's not going to flop because they're just going to use it anyway because they're so used to it.
I mean, ultimately, it's just another way for Facebook to make money. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly. It's, you know, they say it's to stay relevant, but I really don't think bringing apps into an SMS environment is their biggest or their wisest choice to stay relevant. They could add a lot more interaction socially rather than commercially. So, I mean, that's just my opinion.
I mean, first, you got to understand the language, and then after that, you have to be able to put that natural language into action. And as the second link in the show notes shows, they don't exactly have this stuff nailed early on. So,
yeah.
Another one, basically, failures to order flowers with this. So, I mean, it's just some issues.
Yeah.
So, and then someone said, "I don't like those" to a CNN bot referring to news. Then the CNN bot replies, "Try again. Use a few words to tell me what you want to know more about. For example, you could type headlines, Rio Olympics, or politics."
And honestly, in the time it takes you to type that, you could just Siri or, you know, Google, you know, it's so much quicker.
Indeed.
It's just, I'm not seeing it. So, anyway.
Alrighty. Well, inside the U.S. this past week, there was something unveiled in Congress called the Compliance with Court Orders Act of 2016, which is basically an act by the U.S. Congress in an attempt to force technology companies to respond effectively to government requests to open up a device should there be some reason that law enforcement needs to get in. Obviously, there would be due process following all of this, but the question and the pushback coming from the technical side of people has always been and probably will always be that we cannot put a simple way of breaking encryption into our software, our hardware, without having the bad guys able to have a chance of breaking into it as well. So the question should be for these companies, in my opinion, how can we ultimately decide that we want to comply with the government and allow the ability to read encrypted transmission without necessarily giving in to the bad guys and making the bad guys' jobs easier. And that's ultimately what this is going to come down to going forward. And at this point, trying to force a law like this, if it's not, you know, led by a good consensus between government and the tech sector, it's not going to work. And that's what's happening with this one. And the president has already signaled that he won't be signing this. This is actually one of the few times that I agree with President Obama, but we'll save this for another day. I think there needs to be a bit of a cooling down period after this latest FBI case.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like this is mostly stemmed from the whole San Bernardino thing with Apple.
Yeah, and then, you know, let Apple and Google and Microsoft work together and see if there's a way that they can accommodate the wills of law enforcement without necessarily compromising encryption, though it would be pretty hard to do. Because, I mean, at the highest level, you would need to ensure that Apple, Google, and Microsoft have a secure place where they can store this decryption key and that no one will be able to get it without the official warrant behind it. Because, I mean, you could have a rogue employee get it and out it goes, and then they'd have to basically ship another update to the device that would change the keys and whatnot. And then you'd have old keys that are out, and it just becomes a whole messy quagmire that, you know, just would end up being worse than the muddier than the situation that we have now. So I don't know, something does need to happen on this, because we're in 2016 and technology, crime, and encryption are not going away. So there needs to be some agreement between the three as a way of having an equitable solution. So I don't know. But this was tabled today, and or rather this past week, and it's unlikely to pass going forward. So there will have to obviously be another attempt at some point in the future. So I thought we would just inform everyone of this, given the fact that we did cover extensively the whole Apple FBI battle with this. So
yeah,
and I mean, it's something that needs to happen, because it's like saying, oh, I have this huge strong lock on my house. Why shouldn't I be able to prevent people from entering my house without a warrant, right? So that is the equivalent of what we need here, and the ability to have it done in a technologically sound way.
Right.
So, I don't know. Anything else on that?
Nope.
Okie dokie then. And the last one isn't really news, but more so just another AI experiment from Microsoft. This time it's not a racist AI. It's something fairly benign. It is CaptionBot. It's an image that, or rather a system that lets you caption images, and it'll try and guess exactly what you are seeing in the image. So you can basically hand it an image and it'll tell you what it thinks it is. So some examples they have are some cows on a field, and then you say, use this photo, and it analyzes the image, and then it says, I think it's a herd of cattle standing in a field. And there's another one with a mountain, so you can use that, and it says, I think it's a snow-covered mountain. So it is fairly accurate for most of these, and the most complicated one they have here is actually a sandwich cut in half. So... you can use that, and then it says, oh, I think it's a sandwich cut in half. So it's actually...
Oh, wow.
It's actually pretty good. And then you
precise,
can
yeah.
Upload your own image or paste in an image, and then it can recognize people, too. So I paste in an image of Justin Trudeau, and it says, I think it's a man wearing a suit and tie. He seems emoji face with the... I don't know what that one is. It's like the flat face with the line for the mouth. I'm not sure what that is. Disappointed, speechless. I don't know. And then it says, I am 99% sure that's Justin Trudeau.
Oh, wow.
So basically what this is doing is it's analyzing the image and then using Bing image search and image methodologies to look up and see, okay, so we know that this is Justin Trudeau because there have been pages with an image that looks like this on it that have been submitted to us, and that's where this comes from. So
interesting.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. And it's going to go forward, and this is the kind of stuff that, you know, we can say is artificial intelligence to a degree, but it's really just looking at machine learning and learning about what exactly goes on with images. So
yeah
then I pasted in another one, and you can see Stephen Harper, and it realizes that, oh, he's actually happy in this case, whereas Justin Trudeau was kind of angry. So then I can of course put other ones in, and if I, you know, try a RuneScape picture, and that's kind of where it falls down because it doesn't know exactly what RuneScape is. So if I just copy this image from RuneWire, and this is looking like it's going to be just an image that was pasted, I think, by Undoer. So if I paste that in, and then it's going to analyze it, and then it just knows, it says, I'm not really confident, but I think it's a person wearing a hat. And that's what the image actually was. So.
Fair enough.
And I just sent it to you on Skype, Dave, so you can see what the image was.
Gotcha. Oh, fair enough. Okay, well, it's accurate even with the stuff that it's not completely accurate with, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, I knew it was a hat.
Impressive.
So.
Yeah.
You can, of course, play with this at captionbot.ai. And they say what it's made of: computer vision API, emotion API, and the Bing image API. So obviously the Bing image API is the big one for, you know, finding what it actually is, and the computer vision API hooks into that, and the emotion API as well. So very fun little thing to play with. And the reason that this is also here, aside from just being a fun little tool, is that this is actually an interesting juxtaposition of the way Microsoft is going compared to the way Facebook is going, where Facebook is saying they're coming up with bots, which people, when they hear bot, assume some kind of intelligence, right?
Yeah.
But they're basically applications that hook into the phones. But Microsoft is actually using machine learning and digital image processing to build this captionbot.ai. And then, I mean, ultimately something like this could find its way into Bing or, you know, into the Microsoft Windows operating system as a way of potentially unlocking your computer. So overall, I'm happier with what Microsoft has done than Facebook.
Yes, I agree. I can concur.
Alrighty, so that was captionbot.ai. Let's move on to the Skill of the Month update and see what we got for this month. So, April's Dungeoneering Skill of the Month. The month is halfway over. We still got a little bit of a race going on here between the RR Man and Flash. RR Man has 8.9 million experience gained. Flash has 7.3 million XP gained, while Colton is in third place with 4.2. And you're not doing much Dungeoneering this month, I see.
No. Nope. I've got a bigger fish to fry.
Oh, and then at the end, I see that Sorensen 57 and Jamandy 52 have both entered with 200 million XP, and unfortunately, we can't track that.
Oh, darn. It's a thought that counts.
Indeed, it is. So I have no idea how those people could get 200 million Dungeoneering XP.
I had enough trouble getting 104, so kudos to both of them.
Indeed. So we got to about 15 days left. Should be interesting to see what goes on here, and wonder if Colton will come back from the dead. Alrighty, so achievements of the week. So we're going to go on here, and we're first going to say that KJTH Howard got 120 ranged on April 15th, Haven't seen that name in quite some time.
It has been quite a while.
Yeah, KJTH. We also have Adele with 120 Magic and 120 Constitution. Obviously not the singer, just someone who likes that RuneScape name. That was on the 12th. And Scaper King got 99 Fishing on April 10th and 99 RuneCrafting on April 9th. And, of course, you got your completion escape on the 10th. Congratulations.
I did. Finally. It feels good. So now, lo and behold, unfortunately, I'm starting to chip away at the trim requirements.
Oh, what about the Master Questscape?
That's going to be whenever I get fed up with Master or with trim. I'm probably going to rotate if I feel like it. But right now, the biggest thing on the radar is getting my weekly Strange Rocks. So.
Oh, right.
And then everything else
statue.
Filters into that.
I see.
So,
all right. And of course, if you want to submit us an achievement other than, you know, just the numerical achievements, which we gather by the high scores, a completionist cape or a master quest cape, or heck, maybe even a RuneScape birthday, DM us on Twitter at RSBNB or email us at thequestions@rsbnb.com, and we'll filter that all into the podcast somehow, some way. All right. So, pick of the week time. I have a pick of the week that I've been saving for a little bit. It's a pick of the week that I think that we can all use, and we can all, well, some of us can use, and some of us might not be able to use, but it's something that's interesting to me. It's called J Archive. It's basically an archive of that TV show called Jeopardy. You ever watch that?
Yes, I have, actually.
Yeah. So they've been going for 32 seasons, so they have all 32 seasons archived here right now. And combining this with the power of Google, you can actually just pop into Google certain keywords and various things will come up. So I'd like to take you back to February 2nd, 2012, the Double Jeopardy round for $1,600. My paper's not due till next week, so I blew off class to play this free MMORPG set in the fantasy world of Gilinor.
I've actually seen this before.
Yeah, and of course the correct response is, what is RuneScape? So there's that, and then it's basically a nice way of sorting through all these topics that they've gone through through all these years. So if there's something that you see on the show and you want to go back to and have a look at, then well, you can just pull it up. So RuneScape was answered correctly, believe it or not, for that question.
Well, there you go.
So j-archive.com, and of course paired with Google, it's a invaluable resource for sorting through practically any of the episodes that are on there. It uses kind of an old style web page layout, but nonetheless, you can go through all of them. And the most recent one they have is, of course, for April 12th, which was a few days ago. So it does take a few days for them to be added, but they're all here and fairly up to date. So j-archive.com. And, of course, they also have a wagering calculator where you can plop in the three final Jeopardy numbers and then suggest what people should wager. So kind of a fun little thing to play around with and look at, if see what the questions were on a given day and what history looked like. So,
yeah, but definitely some brain food for all you trivia aficionados.
Yeah, so. And I mean, I actually found this. I forget what it was for, but there was a question I was looking up once that was asked, and then I found this website. So I thought, oh, that's neat. We got to use this at some point in the future. And then I remembered the RuneScape question that was mentioned. So obviously, yeah. What is RuneScape for $1,600?
That is the question. That is the question of the ages. What is RuneScape?
Well, according to Jeopardy, it's a fantasy MMORPG set in the fantasy world of Gilinor.
That you skip writing your paper for, which is absolutely accurate. I can relate. I've done it multiple times, and half the times it was in college. So, oh, that's great. I love it.
Oh, boy. And then the final Jeopardy round for that day, just for fun, was 19th century authors. Yeah. And the topic that the RuneScape question in was senioritis.
Okay, even more accurate.
Now, yeah, so obviously related to university, because all the titles for that day were entrance exam, freshman, the sophomore jinx, junior year abroad, senioritis, and postgraduate.
Fair enough.
Alrighty, so what have you been up to this week, Dave?
Well, like I said, I've been doing my Strange Rocks, and then chipping away at some little trim requirements here and there. Aside from gaming, just standard work week. I've been doing some work on my car, but that's pretty much it. I've been doing a little bit of music stuff, revisiting some old material. So we'll see where that goes. But that's pretty much what I've been up to the past week, and watching hockey, definitely.
Oh yeah, you got.
Following the Blues in the playoffs. I got a little heated last night because of the very controversial calls. If you're into hockey at all, definitely look up Game 2 of the playoffs. And there was definitely some controversial calls, and I kind of lost it last night. So anyway.
Alrighty. Well, for me this week on RuneScape, just been training invention and of course doing the daily statues in Mauritania, and so looking forward to the NXT release coming on Monday. So that'll be some good fun with that. But aside from that, this week there was a little thing, a little touring, I almost said circus, but it wasn't a circus, it was a concert called Star Trek The Ultimate Voyage, which is basically a celebration of the 50 years of Star Trek, put together by the Czech National Symphony. And you have a grouping of clips from all the Star Trek episodes and Star Trek movies put to the music from the show, and it was all around a good experience. So 50 years of Star Trek coming in this September, I believe, so it's going to be a big, big event for that.
It's quite a milestone.
Yes, it is. And, I mean, it's just so much more in-depth than that other science fiction one from the 70s called Star Wars, you know? It's so much more in-depth and so much more thought and, you know, stuff to it. So, anyways, but I believe that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week discussing all the NXT goodness that there is, and should be a fun week. So, anything else before we go?
I think that should wrap it up.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your time with us, everyone, and we will see you all next week.
See ya.